All right, so the first thing I want to hear about is what led you to TJU? How'd you get started? And how far did your musical background go?
I've been collecting records since I was like 12 or 13, you know?
Yeah.
And I grew up in Richmond, which was kind of a great town to grow up in from a live music perspective. There's a lot of really cool bands, a lot of really cool punk bands, and a lot of cool little clubs, you know? And they, back then, not only did they have all ages shows and matinees and stuff like that, but it also, you know, the liquor laws weren't as harsh, so they'd let you into stuff just so you didn't come anywhere near the bar.
Yeah.
You know, like, I remember, like, going to a lot of shows with two X's. Like, and the booking agent would put, like, a big X on both of my hands and tell me that if I come near the bar, I'm getting kicked out. But whatever. A really good friend of mine, Norty Horde, the two of us got a radio show at University of Richmond when we were 16, the summer between our sophomore and junior year of high school. And we were the only high school kids that had a show. And it made us feel cool, you know?
For sure.
And it was like, for us, it was like a really big deal. And it was only once a week. And it was really awesome. So I was aware of WTJU because my sister went to UVA. She's 2 years older than me. She was an architecture student. And she said it was a really cool radio station. And basically it was kind of a high priority of mine too, as a, you know, lover of, you know, records and listening to music, to, you know, try to get a radio show.
Yeah, absolutely. So what radio show did you invent?
My radio show was called The Dolphin Field. It was named after an obscure Meat Puppet song. And I think the first year, I mean, I think everybody the first year did them from 2 to 6 in the morning. And eventually I graduated to a midnight to 2 slot.
Ooh.
And those 2 to 6s were amazing. Like back then, like, you know, people would indulge before they did their 2 to 6 shows. And a lot of times you'd put on WTJU at like 5 in the morning and you just hear like because it was pretty 95% vinyl is what we were doing, you know?
Yeah.
And you just hear a record going around at the end because somebody had like fallen asleep on the floor in the studio, you know? the last year I was there, I was the station manager in 88, 89.
Yeah.
And so in that situation, it was my responsibility then I ran unopposed. I'm sure I would have lost if anybody ran against me, but I went up there and two or three times I had to wake up people that were kind of passed out on the floor in Old Cavill Hall. Or is that what it was called? Peabody Hall.
Yeah.
Peabody Hall.
Yeah, Peabody.
That's where it used to be, yeah. But it was like a huge, I mean, it was a big part of my experience there.
Yeah, for sure. So now, was your DJ name DJ Nita Stack? Was that at TJ?
Yeah.
So what's the story behind that?
That's just the name of the, somewhat foolishly, even though I could never really afford it, in the late 90s, I got into buying race horses, and the first horse that I ever bought was called Nita Stack.
Mm-hmm.
And my dear friend David Berman suggested it as a DJ name. And he also gave my wife the DJ name Sheila Takya.
All right.
So he's pretty clever.
For sure.
Cleverness is well documented.
Yeah. So now, how did you meet David Berman? And I guess Stephen Malkmus, too. Was that through TJU or during your time here?
Malkmus, I met him. He was a year older than us.
Okay.
He's class of 88. And very circumstantially, I went to a really small high school in Richmond called Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And about 5 or 6 people from each graduating class went to Virginia.
Yeah.
And one of the 5 was a guy named Ken West, no relation to Steve West, who also went to the same high school and mm-hmm. played in Pavement. But Ken West just happened to be Malkmus's roommate totally randomly.
Wow.
First year. And so Steven and I were really fast friends. I mean, David I met, because it's kind of embarrassing, Maynard Sipe, who still lives in Charlottesville, was a longtime WTJU guy. I don't think he's
Yeah.
still doing a radio show.
Yeah.
Did a really great radio show, but he was for booking most of the shows at Tracks and other venues around town, and he would let me into the shows for free if I flyered the dorms, which in hindsight seems like a really great deal for him. It would take me like 2 or 3 hours and I'd save like a $6 cover, but it was a pleasure to do it, and that's how I met David. David's just like, who's this weird guy that walks around with all the flyers, you know? And like,
Right.
and he was over in the new dorms, and I was in the old. I was in Hancock, and he was an Eccles scholar, so wherever they stuck those geniuses. And so yeah, and he would come to the shows. Like, you know, you got to understand, like bands like Green on Red or Savage Republic, or you know, Charlottesville always had like a really pretty cool thing going on, remarkably good. Even back then, with cool stuff coming through town, like this is before the town was like kind of hyper cosmopolitan like it is now, super
Right.
hip, you know. You know, we had the chance to see some really cool stuff, and you know, first year students, there weren't that many of us there at shows, so you got to know like the, you know, 15, 20, 25 people that would go to shows from your year, you know. And
Right.
Stephen was more selective. He was a history and English double major. He was very studious. Which I wasn't. It was kind of a miracle that I graduated, actually. So yeah, we'd go to shows, and then, you know, through WTJU, there was a network of about six, eight, 10 of us that would, you know, road trip quite frequently to get together to Richmond and Washington, New York, Athens to see bands, you know, that we
Yeah.
loved. So, you know, it kind of became a big part of it. Kind of became like, you know, sort of the hub of my social life, WTJU. I've had 10, 12 really great friends from there, you know.
Yeah. That's awesome. So now
Yeah, thanks.
outside of Charlottesville, you mentioned that it's become more like super hip here. But like outside of it, what do you think the legacy of TJU is, just from other alumni that you know, or just outside of our little bubble here?
I think it's an important part of I think everybody that's had a radio show there who enjoyed it, it became sort of a really sort of enriching part of their experience. I mean, WTJU now is obviously technically it's worldwide. I found it very interesting on my recent visits there over the last 3 years how they can very easily chart everybody who's listening all around the country and the world. Which is kind of freaky. I wouldn't be able to pay attention to that if I was DJing. I would just assume that there was, you know, 10 or 12 people listening, and that was plenty. Like, because those 2 to 6 shows, like, believe me, those 2 to 6 shows back then, when it was just like within 10 miles of Peabody Hall,
Right.
I mean, I guarantee, like, at 5:15 in the morning, you might have had like 3 listeners, and they are usually calling you up because they kind of dictated what they wanted to hear.
Right.
By making you fetch the record as opposed to them getting out of off their couch and like putting their own record on, you know. So,
Yeah.
but I think WTJU is just, you know, generally thought of, you know, for a long time as one of the better college radio stations in the country. So I think it's, and you know, the number of, you know, alums from there that have gone on to, you know, significant endeavors in the music industry. Obviously, it's not, you know, just, you know, myself and David and Stevens, you know, James McNew, John Deers, Brenda Dunlap did the costumes, I know, for years for David Byrne from Talking Heads,
Yeah.
and the list goes on and on, you know. I'm sure I'm leaving out at least 30 people. Gay Pratt. I mean, it's just like one of those things, you know, like I always hesitate to list people's names from that era because I always leave out one or two people that I'll end up feeling badly about.
Right.
No, it's I think it's a very, just generally considered to be a great college radio station, like, you know, nationally. And, you know, the fact that, you know, active in the community and, you know, put big, you know, the marathons have always been kind of a big part of college life there. And it's just cool.
Yeah. Well, thanks. So
My
now
pleasure.
I've spoken
Yeah.
to a lot of people who have sort of picked up on the spirit per se of TJU, but I'm wondering, how do you think that was cultivated within the community, but also within Silver Jews and Pavement? Did you pick up on any of that and experience that?
You know, we always wore the shirts,
Yeah.
And people would ask us what it was, because that's the other thing too. Like, you know, those, especially all the shirts were pretty cool, but like some really cool people over the years designed t-shirts that actually, you know, I'm sure you guys, you know, could have sold a lot of t-shirts, you know, more than just like, you know, within the scope of that particular 10-day period of that marathon. I mean, Daniel Johnston did one, and Jad Fair, and I mean, the list goes on and on. It's a pretty remarkable collection of shirts. It'd be pretty cool to have a framed shirt from every year of the Rock Marathon since they started doing t-shirts on, you know, on the walls and that, where you guys are now. But
for sure.
I just think it's something we felt really confident about in terms of like Pavement and Silver Jews, the fact that we'd have that experience. I'm not sure if like, I don't think it really helped us too much on stage, but see, we were able to, you know, through the record library there, we were able to really sort of expand our, you know, our musical knowledge, and also just the exchange with the other DJs, you know, and listening to their shows. You know, there was even like, you know, there was rivalries between shows back then and stuff like that. You know, you wanted to be like the first guy to play the new Laughing Hyenas 7-inch, you know, before like the other 8 people would, you know, play it.
Right.
Just for your own like weird thing. But I mean, you know, and like, you know, that kind of thing, like competition's like sort of beneficial, you know, like that's one thing about some music scenes today where the kids are all really good players and they all seem like they're kind of too nice or something. And like, I think it's good to, I'm not saying you should hate other bands or anything like that, or other DJs or anything like that, but I'm saying like, you know, it kind of keeps you on the ball. But I think WTJU just gave us a fair amount of confidence, you know, going into, I mean, we all moved to New York City and, you know, they kind of looked at us in New York. The scene was really, really, it was really snotty. Like in Hoboken and New York back then, it was really tight and really snotty. And then you quickly find out that about half of it was like trust fund kids that didn't have to work. You know, we all had to work, and they sort of looked at us like we were brats just because we were coming from the South, and they were the brats. We just weren't goth, you know, like, no, I think we always felt like, it was kind of the foundation of what made us, you know, feel confident in college anyways, you know?
Yeah. They were the brats. So now...
Yeah, they were the brats.
That's a good one.
I mean, think about it. Like, you're living in New York City and you don't have to work and all you do is, you know, play in a band, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to name any names like Pussy Galore or anything, but there's one for you.
All right. So now, when you were a station manager or like doing your show, what were some of the challenges or like speed bumps per se that you ran into?
None.
Yeah.
There was so, in fact, it was kind of like an era in which the station needed to change, because the year that I did it, I sort of kind of promoted like a carnival atmosphere, I think, that was probably offensive to like a lot of like classical and jazz staff. I wasn't even really cognizant of the fact that I had any responsibilities beyond sort of the rock department. And I wasn't the rock director. I was the station manager, you know? And I mean, I took care of like the bass. I took care of all the stuff. I mean, I was, you know, responsible with the keys in the office, getting the mail, all that kind of stuff. But in terms of the actual shows, that the rock department kind of just turned the Studio A and Studio B into like kind of a rambling wreck, you know? And I think because of, and that was at the end of like 3 or 4 years of that, and I being the least responsible station manager probably in the station's history, just kind of promoted, you know, too much recklessness. So I think sort of after that, like, the thing is, when I got a radio show there, they really sort of, they told us, like, they taught us how to use the equipment, you know, which is, you know, obviously the foundation for like, you know, being a DJ today.
Right.
You know, cause we were always working with two decks and a cart machine. But at the same time, so they taught us how to use the equipment, but the emphasis was way more on what you played and, you know, not even really caring about making sure you didn't break equipment, but like they didn't worry about like dead air or anything like that. That was not a concern. It was just like your content was like 95% of the reason why you're there, and the other stuff was just like not as important. So I think after, and people abused that, you know, like I said, people would, you know, pass out on the floor when they're doing a radio show. I mean, I think it just got, and I don't think anybody from the university was offended. None of the student community was or anything like that. But I think some of like the more serious members of the community did really, you know, more staid radio shows like the folk department, classical and jazz. They were like, who are, you know, I think they, I don't know if they actually spoke out, but basically from 90 on, there's just a way more professional attitude there and more organization. And it was probably actually necessary. And, you know, through being bad at my job, maybe I've contributed to making the station better.
There you go. It's good for us.
Yeah, I mean, that was fun to get the mail. Like, that was, like, another reason why I did it. Like, a new, I ran on a post, I said, and you get the mail, and, like, there's a lot of great freebies in there, you know?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's a skill.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff like that. It was very exciting to get the mail. Definitely. And, you know, we'd all kind of, like, I don't know. We just took advantage of a situation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So now, as far as like TJU, do you have any sort of memory or story that was just like so quintessential to TJU? Or what was that moment where you were like, I'm at TJU?
Steven, during his radio show, and he always did a 2 to 6. He never wanted to move up from 2 to 6. And basically, after a certain point, Ken Ganfield did a radio show there for years, did a really great radio show. Essentially, the two of us would end up doing his radio show while he listened to records in Studio B and made up songs to sing the for the PSAs.
Yeah.
So and so we would do live PSAs, and we did a lot of those for, like, you know, you got like an index card with the PSA, like a it's a 30-second thing, and he would come up with a riff. Like, he would listen to. I think it's really got where he got really into like prog rock. I think like that Studio B on the other side of Peabody Hall really is sort of an important. It took him from being like a punk rock kid to being more proggy, like sort of more like how he is today in Chicks and stuff. And like, right. This is his biggest influence as a songwriter, I think, sort of came out of that room. And I just remember a lot of times just being in hysterics at like 3:30 in the morning, being giddy and singing along to PSAs. It was pretty pathetic. And then, you know, Echo Slavia, this band I was played in there.
Mm-hmm.
We played live on the air, and David was really offensive. He used a lot of offensive language. And that's another thing that era too sort of stiffened, you know, that policy at WTJU. I mean, like, the FCC wasn't really paying attention back then. You know what I mean? So you didn't like go on the air and like, you know, use profane language, but like, you know, you weren't worried about playing a song with a bad word in it.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, a lot of great memories in there, but yeah, I'd say like, playing, I can't sing, you know, and, I would try to sing and we'd make up songs and we'd play them live on the air. So nobody cared, you know?
Yeah. That's nice. So now, besides being a really terrific environment for getting the mail, what do you think TJU has done well?
Go ahead.
In terms of, like, fostering an environment, like, what else do you think TJU has done well?
I think it just provides an opportunity for students and people who live in that community to express themselves. And then, you know, the tremendous amount of support from that community and now sort of like we were talking about before, like internationally, you know, I think WTJU sort of always had a certain amount of responsibilities, certainly within that community, to like kind of be the flag bearer of like, you know, what's significant and what's sort of cool in a wide variety of genres of music. Now, when I was there, I didn't have that much appreciation for the other departments, you know, because I was just into rock, you know, and like, I was never cool, but you know, you always think you're cool when you're 20, but I was always a complete dork. But now, I mean, there's a lot of really incredible DJs there and there still are. So there, I mean, the opportunity, WTJU provides, you know, sort of an opportunity to people who want to listen to it, who want to like, you know, get into music, you know, and people are putting thought into what they're doing, you know, so it's pretty cool that, like, you know, you sort of, you know, you're in control of your own programming. I'm pretty sure that's the way it is, right? You can do whatever you want.
Yep.
As long as you don't play songs with F-bombs.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, I'm way into it, man. If I lived in Richmond or Charlottesville, I'd be up there. I don't know if they let me have a show, but I'd be up there all the time. But when I do come through, I like to hang with Nick Rubin and Richard David Moore. I like to call him by all three of his names.
Yeah.
And I try to stop by their shows and, you know, do a show with them. And then had a great time not too long ago doing a live event at one of these modern brew pub type places they have last winter. But yeah, I got over there to see my family, and I always come to the BGJU. So that's about the only place that I consistently visit in Virginia, you know?
Yeah. Well, we are flattered. So now, is there anything else that I didn't cover that you'd like to add about the station or yourself or what you're up to now?
No. I think it's cool that there's a student-only station now.
Yeah.
Because I think if there was ever any tension between students and, you know, post-grads or just members of the community in terms of, like, how much time there is for programming. So I think it's, in a way, that programming time has sort of been doubled. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important that students, you know, in a lot of cases, obviously teenagers and people in their early 20s have that opportunity to experience radio. You know, because obviously radio comes in a lot of different forms these days. And I imagine you guys have as much or more people listening on the internet than you do, like, in cars or on stereos, you know. So
for sure.
Yeah, I just think it's important for kids to feel like the radio isn't some place reserved for, you know, pro, like, you know, these morning talk show people and, like, you know, NPR. I mean, it's just like something you can be a part of. So, I mean, obviously there's, you know, I think it's an important part of life, you know, radio. I mean, I listen to all ball games on it all the time, and that was my introduction to it.
Cool. All righty. Well, thank you so much, Bob. This has been awesome.
Yeah, thank you, Audrey. Take good care of yourself.
Yeah, you do the same.